You're listening to Central Time. I'm Jean Purcell.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up later in the program, we'll be joined by a Wisconsin poet whose new book, Darktown Follies, is gathering critical acclaim.
Our next guest says the United States can do great things when the nation commits to a cause, and this generation's cause should be fighting Alzheimer's disease. We're joined now by Tom Lavacek, who is the executive director of the Alzheimer's Association of Southeastern Wisconsin. He wrote an op-ed in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel titled, The U.S. Should Commit to Beating Alzheimer's Disease. Tom, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on, Rob.
I want to start with some of the basics here, and one of the basics is just defining Alzheimer's disease. I think intellectually, a lot of us might think we might know what it is. We might have a relative who's had it, or we might have heard something about it or read something about it. From where you sit, how do you define it?
Sure. Well, Alzheimer's disease is a disease of the brain, the most common form of dementia in older adults, and it starts by the accumulation of a protein in the brain called beta amyloid, which basically sort of gums up the works. It cuts off the communication between brain cells and then eventually suffocates brain cells and they die. And it continues to progress until you yourself pass away if you have the disease. So it's a fatal disease, the sixth leading cause of death in the United States right now, which is a surprise to some people. And as I said, the most common form of dementia, dementia being an umbrella term that talks about cognitive impairment that is severe enough to affect a person's daily living. And there's several different kinds of dementia. Alzheimer's in older folks accounts for over two-thirds of all dementias.
Yeah, you mentioned that a lot of people are surprised to learn that it's the sixth leading cause of death in the U.S., and I think that is a figure that surprises people. In terms of numbers, how does that translate out? And then are the numbers, the rate we see here in Wisconsin, any different from the rest of the country?
The numbers in Wisconsin are pretty similar to the rest of the country and across the United States. So basically about 5.2 million people across the United States with Alzheimer's right now, about 110,000 here in Wisconsin. Those numbers, it's essentially an opportunistic disease of aging, Rob. So if you make it to the age of 65, you will have a 1 in 8 chance, 14% of having Alzheimer's. If you make it to 85, you'll have a 1 in 2 chance, closer to 50% chance of having Alzheimer's. So it dramatically increases with age in terms of your vulnerability to it. But the big deal, it's a big problem that we have right now with those kinds of numbers, but what is happening with the aging of the baby boomers is the real cause for concern.
And those numbers it's that sort of wave of people we see coming towards that age. And as you say, it's opportunistic. And so it's the age that's the factor, and the sheer numbers of people who are behind that boom generation, that boomer generation, is what you're looking at.
Exactly. Yeah. So the front edge of the baby boomers are turning 68 in 2014. They were turning 67 in 2013. I have to change what I say. Turning 68 in 2014 at the same rate, 10,000 people a day are entering the baby, the over 65 age group, 10,000 people a day. And so if nothing changes in terms of the way that we address Alzheimer's in the United States, those numbers that I talked about are going to increase dramatically. The state of Wisconsin, who has done a lot of public health surveying about this issue, predicts that the numbers of people with cognitive impairment in Wisconsin will increase by 68% between where we are right now and just 2035. So, in 21 years, we'll have 68% more people with advanced cognitive impairment due to aging, many of them with Alzheimer's disease.
And this is where the money comes in, because it almost sounds crass to say this, but we are talking some really big dollars here. And as you look ahead, that wave of people, you extrapolate out the costs of that, and they're tremendous. It's amazing, those numbers that we're looking at.
Yeah, and, you don't want to just talk about it strictly from the point of view of dollars, but anybody that's been down this road, I don't know if you or Veronica have had it hit your family, but everybody already knows the personal financial toll that also Alzheimer's takes. It devastates family finances. It devastates the finances of the older person and what they might have put away for their retirement years. But it's also bankrupting our Medicaid and Medicare systems. And that's not really hyperbole. We're spending $140 billion a year right now in our Medicaid and Medicare programs just to pay for Alzheimer's care in medical and long-term care settings. And that number is going to increase. You know, there's the two big studies that are out there, the RAND study, which is the one that I was talking about a lot in the article, but even studies that we've done here at the Alzheimer's Association that has that $140 billion number going up to $1 trillion by the year 2050. So, you know, essentially, it would be more than we're spending on all domestic discretionary programs at the federal level at that point. So, you know, it will bankrupt the country in our long-term care systems if we don't do something about this.
Yeah, in your piece, you refer to this as a humanitarian issue, and the financial piece is part of that, right?
Financial piece is part of it, but I think the real humanitarian part of it is that, you know, when I talk to the Alzheimer's researchers and you know, it's wonderful to be part of the association, which is the world's largest private funder of Alzheimer's research. We're connected to all the top researchers in the world. We have an annual research conference that last year drew about 6,000 researchers to Boston. Almost to a researcher, you hear an optimism that it's really not a matter of if we're going to beat Alzheimer's anymore. It's a matter of when, and it's all about now compressing the timeline. And so, you know, the humanitarian side is, if we can actually do that, why wouldn't we? I mean, if you think about the human suffering that happens for individuals that get this disease, if you think about what happens, you know, to families and kids and grandkids, you know, watching their loved ones go through this, I mean, that's the true humanitarian side. Now, of course, there's lots of good causes and lots of important diseases, but this one, when you have the top scientists saying, you know, we think we could do this if we just really had more of a concerted effort for it, you know, that really makes you pay attention.
And you compare it to what happened with polio, and mm-hmm. you had some experiences with that. And, you know, in the 30s, 40s, and 50s in America, that was one of those conditions that affected practically every family you talked to. And not so much.
Right, yeah. Now, you know, we do still have, you know, people that wind up with post-polio syndrome if they had polio as a kid. Luckily, I have not experienced that myself. But other than the post-polio syndrome, we have basically eliminated polio in the United States and in most of the developed world. The only places where it still pops up occasionally is places where vaccination programs aren't still being implemented, and usually that's because of civil war or something like that. You know, so I mean, and there's a long list of things, you know, that are kind of like that are diseases and conditions that we've been able to either eradicate them from happening in the first place, or if they do come along, there's treatments and cures that we didn't have before. And that's really what we're hoping for with Alzheimer's. Whether we could ever cure it is a tough question, but we may be able to prevent it from happening in people that would otherwise be getting it if we could do the right things. So, and if you'd like me to just sort of distinguish between that for a second.
Yeah, that would be helpful because I think a lot of people, you know, they think about getting a vaccine or something and then all your problems are solved, but this is more complicated than that.
Well, it may well be, but here's what we know about Alzheimer's, okay? Right now, the average age of diagnosis in the United States is 73 years of age. And the person is diagnosed in the early to mid stages of the disease usually. I mean, it's become enough where people can't ignore it anymore and can't deny it. And but we know that in that person who's sitting there in front of the doctor at the age of 73, that something was changing in their brain as soon in life as their late 40s, early 50s, These beta amyloid depositions were taking place in the brain. There was subtle cognitive changes that were already happening. Now, by the time the person's in the middle to late stages of the disease, a lot of the brain has been destroyed by this disease. That's why the person can't remember. It's not that they're not trying. It's that the memory center of the brain doesn't literally exist anymore. It's been destroyed by Alzheimer's disease. And nobody's yet figured out a way to regenerate brain cells or to create a new brain for a person. So the strategy to prevent Alzheimer's in the future is to prevent it happening in people that would otherwise be getting it. And scientists are right now working on ways that they can see into the brain and see the disease forming at the very earliest stages of that process.
So is that what you meant before when you said that scientists are optimistic now?
Yeah, because now we have these diagnostic tools so that we're going to be able to, let's say you have 10 people in a room, within a couple years we'll be able to say, well, guess what? I mean, if they're all in their 40s and 50s, let's assume, you know, point to person one and say, you have a high probability of getting Alzheimer's. Person number two, you don't have to worry. Person number three, maybe. And then with the ones that have the higher probability, to be able to get something into them as a treatment and also to encourage them to make lifestyle changes, more exercise, probably changing diet and things like that, the goal is to be able to prevent Alzheimer's from developing in that person, or at least to push it out 5 to 10 years or even more into the future. So this is very much what happened with heart disease, where they found a biomarker, which was cholesterol, and you were able to be assessed to see if you have high cholesterol. Oops, you're a person that might have a really strong probability of getting a heart attack if you don't change your lifestyle and take this statin drug. And now people that can do that, myself included, we have reduced our risk of having a heart attack exponentially.
All right. We got to take a break right now and take time out for the news. We're talking with Tom Lavacek about why he thinks the U.S. needs to commit to fighting Alzheimer's disease. And we'd like to hear from you on this. What do you think the nation should be doing to combat the disease? Should the nation be helping out a lot more financially? Have you or someone you know been touched by Alzheimer's? How has it affected you and your family? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or send us an email, talk@WPR.org.
We'll pick up that conversation and take your calls right after the news. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Gene Purcell. I'm filling in today for Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Gene Purcell. I'm filling in today for Rob Ferret. We'll pick up our discussion now about Alzheimer's with Tom Lavacek. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Our guest is calling for a concerted effort to defeat Alzheimer's, to really take a stab at doing something to make the future for this disease look a lot different than it is right now. How has this affected you? We're taking your calls, as I say, at 800-642-1234. And Tom Lavacek, I'd like to talk about that a little bit, because one of the things you're calling for here is sort of a Manhattan Project for Alzheimer's disease. And what has the funding scenario looked like? Where is the money coming from right now to fight Alzheimer's? And where would you like to see that, you know, how would you like to see that change?
Sure. Great question. So there's basically three pots of money, and I'll just describe them in increasing size. The smallest pot comes from organizations like ours that raise money through things like walks and private donations to fund research. And we're able to fund about $25 million of research a year, which is not insignificant, but still not what it's going to take. And there's other organizations like ours. Then the next level is the federal government, which funds through the National Institutes of Health about $450 million a year in Alzheimer's research funding, a number that has essentially stayed flat or actually lost ground to inflation for about the last 7 or 8 years. And then the largest group of the largest funders of Alzheimer's research is actually the pharmaceutical companies, who take the findings from places like the Alzheimer's Association or the federal government, take the most promising findings and try to develop them into treatments. And they can spend $1 billion easily just developing one drug or trying to, and then have it fail in clinical trials. The pharmaceutical companies, rightly so, are not able to track down every possible lead and fund at $1 billion or more each every possible kind of an approach that might be used. So they work in tandem with us and with the federal government to try to surface the most promising opportunities. So, but that $450 million from the federal government, that's the area that we feel has the most potential to go up. And, of course, everybody wants more from the federal government, and the federal government's in a lot of fiscal trouble, and we know that. But they also have the biggest vested interest because, as I said, they're spending $140 billion a year on Alzheimer's care and treatment. So we're calling to have that go to at least $2 billion in a very short period of time. And the scientists can use it. They can spend it. Right now at the NIH, there's a proposal process. The highest-ranked proposals that come into NIH right now, you know, if you can imagine some getting A's, some getting B's, some getting C's, the group that's in the A's, the top-ranked proposals in the NIH, they're only funding less than 10% of the top-ranked proposals right now. So there is the possibility that the breakthrough treatment is right there waiting to be funded, and we're just not able to get to it. And you put that up against other things that the federal government spends money on, you know, you have to think that it's a wise investment. At least I do.
Do other nations have some of the same issues with Alzheimer's as the U.S.? And if so, would it be helpful to get more than just the United States involved?
Oh, sure. Yeah, there's a global war going on against Alzheimer's. And the Alzheimer's Association is actually almost an international organization. As I said, we host that conference that 6,000 researchers from around the world come to. We fund researchers in a number of different countries that are doing promising research. And a lot of other countries do put money into Alzheimer's research funding, too, some at a higher per capita level than the United States does. But nobody is really doing it to the level of like a Manhattan Project, as I put it. I just believe that if we really all committed to this at a much higher level, we could see the breakthrough within the next 5 to 10 years that would make Alzheimer's a preventable disease.
Let's take a few phone calls right now. We've got listeners who would like to join in. And if you'd like to join in, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Rob, who's with us from Green Bay. Hi, Rob.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great.
All right, I just had a quick question. I was hearing earlier you were saying that in some of these cases, basically the memory areas of the brain don't exist anymore. And I was wondering, with stem cell research and the things going on with that, how that plays into this whole puzzle, if that would be a possibility in the future for actually reproducing or regenerating these cells that you say kind of disappear or no longer functioning.
Rob, thanks for the question. And Tom Lavacek, it sounds as though he's a little further ahead than where the research might be right now.
Well, not exactly. I mean, so stem cells, you know, the cells that make up the spinal column and the brain have been the toughest cells to regenerate. And so stem cells are being looked at, especially in the area of spinal cord regeneration. And they have been looked at in terms of brain cell regeneration. There's a couple huge issues there, you know, other than the social issues, you know, around should we be doing stem cell research or not. The issue with Alzheimer's is theoretically it may be possible to recreate a better brain again in a person. However, we accumulate our memories throughout our lifetime. So you could make a more functional person that would still not know who they are. So that's why on stem cell scientists and the extent of the damage that's been done to the brain, scientists have not really looked at that as one of the more promising pathways in terms of Alzheimer's. Instead, what they look at is how can we keep this protein from depositing in the brain, or once it begins to deposit, how can we sort of wash it out so it doesn't gum up the works? I'm obviously way oversimplifying this, but those are the two most promising pathways for research into lessening the effects of Alzheimer's. But as I said, once it's further along, there's pictures on our website of autopsies of brains, of a normal brain at the age of 80 and an Alzheimer's brain at the age of 80, and you can see it's about half the size, literally half the size, because it's just been eaten away by the disease.
Let's take a quick phone call from Mary, who joins us from Milwaukee. Hi, Mary.
Hi. My question is, I had a grandmother who suffered terribly from Alzheimer's on my mother's side, and my father, who's about 82, was recently diagnosed with it. Is this necessarily a death sentence for me in terms of guarantee of getting Alzheimer's?
Oh, genetics, yeah. Well, so here's the answer, Mary. So there is one form of Alzheimer's that's extremely rare that is dominantly inherited genetically, just like Huntington's disease is, but it's, as I said, it's extremely rare, and it normally hits people in their 40s, and the progression of the disease is very fast. The person is usually dead within about 9 months. So that probably didn't happen to your parents. The more common form of Alzheimer's that we see in older adults, it develops very slowly over time. It progresses very slowly. And in terms of a genetic link, the scientists are only beginning to figure that out. We know that it can skip generations. Having parents who have Alzheimer's, it does increase your susceptibility to getting Alzheimer's yourself. However, it's not causative. It's not like it's guaranteed that if your parents had it, you're going to have it. It can skip a generation. For some reason, it can start in generations where neither parent had it, and one of the kids can get it. So the genetic links we're only beginning to figure out. There's been 11 genes that have been identified so far that are implicated in Alzheimer's disease, but nobody totally understands how that genetic piece works. Someday we will, and it's an important part of the research right now.
Mary was also curious about whether a vegetarian diet would help prevent Alzheimer's, and what is the role of diet? Does anybody know?
Sure. There's a number of things you can do to reduce your risk factors. The main ones are to actually take care of the co-occurring disorders, which are commonly seen with Alzheimer's: diabetes, hypertension, and obesity. We always say if you can control the numbers for that, you're going to reduce your risk. After that, exercise, diet, and keeping yourself mentally stimulated and socially involved are the most important things that you can do. So there's a number of things on our website at ALZ.org that you can look at that provide more background and more information on dietary changes that you can make that have been found to be useful. We also have a 24/7 helpline, 1-800-272-3900. People can call that and get more information on diet and exercise regimens that have been proven to be helpful. So that's all available on our website and by phone.
Well, Tom, thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
And good luck with the campaign. Tom Lavacek is the executive director of the Alzheimer's Association of Southeastern Wisconsin. He wrote an op-ed in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel titled, U.S. Should Commit to Beating Alzheimer's Disease.